Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert, because that's all I do. I work with amicable divorces. Today's episode is about one of the most important aspects of moving on in a divorce, or actually in any relationship that isn't really working for you, and where irreparable harm seems to have been committed. This episode is about forgiveness. Forgiveness is unbelievably important for these reasons. One, it helps you, the one who has been betrayed or hurt. It's for the forgiver. It's not for the forgiven. That's very, very important. Forgiveness is for those who are doing the forgiving, those who have been harmed, not the forgiver. Number two, it's necessary in order to move past the experience that hurt you. You will never get past the hurt unless you do something about it. It's under your control. Number three, you can't grow emotionally or spiritually without forgiving. Embodying that hurt will stunt your growth in those two areas and kind of make you sick, which is number four, your physical health depends on it. Literally, the anger and the hurt that you're holding before you forgive, because forgiveness releases all of that, it really does cause you physical health effects. And then number five, you need people to forgive you. You know, this is not just about a one-time event. This is part of a series of events that has happened in your life. And not only do you need to forgive those who have harmed you, but you have unintentionally or intentionally harmed other people. So this is kind of a balance in nature and a balance within your own life. So I'm going to read to you from some articles written on forgiveness, and then we're going to give a few little examples, real life events and how they work. So what is forgiveness? This is from the University of Berkeley, and it's a publication called The Greater Good. What is forgiveness? Psychologists generally define forgiveness as a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance toward a person who has harmed you, regardless of whether they actually deserve your forgiveness. Just as important as defining what forgiveness is, though, is understanding what forgiveness is not. Experts who study or teach forgiveness make clear that when you forgive, you do not gloss over or deny the seriousness of an offense against you. Forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting, because you really can't forget, nor does it mean condoning or excusing offenses. Though forgiveness can help repair a damaged relationship, it doesn't obligate you to reconcile with the person who harmed you or release them from legal accountability. Instead, forgiveness brings the forgiver peace of mind and frees him or her from corrosive anger. While there is some debate over whether true forgiveness requires positive feelings toward the offender, experts agree that it at least involves letting go of deeply held negative feelings. In that way, it empowers you to recognize the pain you suffered without letting that pain define you, enabling you to heal and move on with your life. Essentially, you gain control. This is me talking. Essentially, you gain control over your life again, because it feels out of control when somebody's really hurt you. Forgiving puts you back in control of your own life. It gives you power back. Okay, now here's an article from Psychology Today. It's a little longer, and it defines forgiveness, and then we go through some aspects of how this works, how it evolves. So forgiveness is the release of resentment or anger. Forgiveness doesn't mean reconciliation. Okay, we all agree on that. One doesn't have to return to the same relationship or accept the same harmful behaviors from an offender. Absolutely not. In fact, in a divorce situation where you're not going to go back and you land in my office, forgiveness real, I can tell whether forgiveness has happened, and it has to happen at some point in time, or the divorce really won't conclude. And this is what I find. A lot of people come to me and they say they're amicable. They want to be amicable. And amicable just means you want to make your own decisions. You don't want a judge to make decisions for you. Hopefully, you've gotten through the emotional divorce before you've started the legal divorce. And when people come to me, they come to me for the legal divorce, the filing and the mediating. I can tell when somebody's gotten over the emotional divorce. A, it's taken time from the time they decided to file or at least separate to when they start the filing. People are very different once they've gotten through the emotions and there's been some forgiven and they've kind of moved on and started living their own lives. Back to the article. Forgiveness is vitally important for the mental health of those who have been victimized. It propels people forward rather than keeping them emotionally engaged in an injustice or trauma. Forgiveness has been shown to elevate mood, health reasons, elevate mood, enhance optimism, and guard against anger, stress, anxiety, and depression. However, there are scenarios in which forgiveness is not the best course for a particular person. Sometimes a victim of sexual abuse becomes more empowered when they give themselves permission not to forgive. Well, okay, I wanted to read this to you because I wanted to give you what Psychology Today is saying, but I actually question this. I mean, philosophically, I think everything has to be forgiven. That's where I come from. So if from my philosophical position, everything has to be forgiven, not forgotten, and sexual abuse is probably one of the worst things that can happen to you because it defines you and it defines your other relationships, it really is problematic to moving forward in healthy relationships. And so for that reason, I think forgiveness is ultimate. I think forgiveness, even in the worst situations, has to be deployed. I think it's your only chance for healing. And once you forgive in something as extraordinary as sexual abuse, I think that elevates you and more than you know and gives you more power over your own life because we never know what devastating things are going to happen to us. Yet we have to deal with them, don't we? All right, so the article goes on and says, well, how do you forgive someone who has wronged you? How does that work? By demanding an apology or nothing at all, no, that doesn't work. However, it's often the healthiest path forward if you can get an apology, but you can't demand an apology. They have to come organically and from the heart of the other person. And the other person has to have the empathy necessary to understand that they've hurt you. So I don't think you can demand an apology. Going on with the article, a prominent model put forth by psychologist Robert Enright delineates four steps of forgiveness. The first is to uncover your anger by exploring how you've avoided or addressed the emotion. Second, is to make the decision to forgive. That's huge, making the decision to forgive. You can't forgive without deciding that this is something you want to do and you have to understand why you want to do it. You can't just do it, okay, I forgive you. There has to be more underneath that. You have to understand what you're forgiving. And you have to understand and pay attention to how your body feels, how your heart feels, how your head feels once you engage in the forgiveness. So Enright says, begin by acknowledging that ignoring or coping with the offense hasn't worked, and therefore forgiveness might provide a path forward. Third, cultivate forgiveness by developing compassion for the offender. Okay, this is really hard, but when I'm dealing with people who have not done forgiveness yet, or are still angry with their spouse as they're going through the filing for the divorce or the mediation for the divorce, I say, look, if you go back in time and look at how your spouse was raised, is there anything in the relationship, the parental relationship with your spouse and his or her parents, that would be an indication for the behavior that has caused you so much hurt? And invariably, 99% of the time, all of a sudden the light bulb goes on in the betrayed or the hurt and says, well, yes, this is what went on. I can see that for myself now, or I've been told that by my spouse, that this is how they were raised. This is the behavior they were used to. And I said, well, then maybe it makes sense that they exhibited this behavior towards you. It doesn't make it right, but at least you can make sense of it. And if we can make sense of it, that really helps us in the act of forgiveness. So back to the article, reflect on whether the act was due to malicious intent or circumstances in the offender's life. See, this is the way it works. And my therapist, friends, and colleagues have really taught me a lot on this. Lastly, Enright says, release the harmful emotions and reflect on how you may have grown from the experience in the act of forgiveness itself. So number two, he asks, how do I overcome resentment? Well, resentment, in my opinion, is part of the experience of being hurt. I mean, to be hurt, well, puts you in another dimension of emotion. And if it takes the relationship away, if it takes the marriage away, yeah, you can easily resent. I mean, I've had one couple comes to mind, but there are several couples where this has happened to. But one couple in specifics, they dated, they were married less time than they dated. They had a child. The child was under 1 year old when they came to me to get divorced. And there was sexual misconduct on the father's side. And the mother was so resentful because it just dashed, ruined her plans for the future. She loved being a mom. She wanted to be married. He claims there were problems with the relationship going into it. She claims there weren't. I wasn't there. What do I know? Only they know. But the resentment came up because the hopes and plans for the future were dashed, even in a short-term marriage. But there was a child involved, and that does change the dynamic. So here's what Enright says. Resentment can sometimes linger for years, even if we believe we've moved on or forgotten about it. To release resentment, reflect on why the person may have committed the offense, sit with the pain, and then try to forgive the other person, because forgiveness can instill a sense of strength that overpowers bitterness. So here's the next question. How do I forgive my partner for cheating on me? The decision to forgive an affair is deeply personal. There are two of the biggest reasons why people get divorced. If I may digress a second. The biggest is financial. People need money to live. And when the finances aren't right, if both people aren't contributing, or if it's set up where one person contributes, the other person raises the family, still money can still be an influencing factor if the person who has assumed that responsibility has a difficult time holding a job. The other key reason for divorce is infidelity. And you have seen with other podcast episodes I've done that it's not just men. It's almost equal. Men and women commit infidelity. And that was a surprise to me once I started exploring that. But money and infidelity, two biggest reasons why people divorce. But we all really focus on infidelity. So a key component, back to the article, is for the partner who had the affair to be completely transparent and honest from the moment forward to rebuild trust in the relationship. Okay, so in my divorce, it's not that I didn't know we had problems in the relationship. I did. we hadn't discussed therapy. We really hadn't discussed the issues. And a lot of times people don't. They recognize they are issues, but they don't discuss them. But when I was told that he wanted a divorce, he did say there was infidelity. Now, he didn't say there was infidelity throughout the marriage, which I found out later there was. He just said there has been infidelity, which was his signal that the marriage needed to be ended. And it was with Carmen the baboon trainer. Now, yes, this is extremely funny. We were both with the circus when we met. He went back to a traveling circus after we both left the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus where we met and became civilians and tried doing regular jobs. He decided to join the circus again. And Carmen, who was a lovely person, I knew her from the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus. She was an absolutely lovely person. She was a great baboon trainer and her animals looked fabulous. I guess she was having problems in her marriage. My husband was having, Clark was having problems in our marriage. And so they got together and commiserated. It didn't last. And I didn't get upset. Strangely enough, that didn't upset me. What hurt me more than anything was that there wasn't the opportunity at that point in time to look into therapy so we could explore the reasons. So even if we had to leave the marriage, we could become friends, we could become clear about why we were leaving the marriage. And maybe it was a marriage that really couldn't work in the first place. But at least we could become clear. The therapy happened later when the first initial divorce filing didn't work, and that had to be terminated, and then we started another filing in Los Angeles. And by the way, if I may add, I was so out of it emotionally that I was getting divorced. I don't remember one single thing about the paperwork. And now I'm dealing with paperwork and a divorce. Isn't that interesting? I don't remember one single thing about the paperwork. I mean, I participated in it. I had to, or I wouldn't have gotten divorced. It was a Los Angeles divorce. And then we did try and engage in therapy, but you know, I couldn't go back. I had gone through a year of emotional hell, not resentment with him, resentment towards me, and that I didn't do what I could have, should have done in my head to make the marriage work. I was really down on me, never once down on him. And it's just interesting how different people react to infidelity and to the issue of betrayal. But he did tell me. I don't know that he apologized, but I also didn't need it. Because I knew we were having problems, and for me, infidelity was just a symbol that we were having problems. So, you know, everybody handles things differently. But the next thing Robert Enright says is, how do you forgive yourself? So that was my year, one whole year of sadness because I needed to forgive myself. Did I cause my spouse to commit the offense? That was me asking myself. So here's what Enright says. Forgiving another person is one thing, but what happens when we commit the offense ourselves? Okay, well, I committed the offense in my estimation of not being a great wife, failing in being a wife. That was my offense. He says it's important to take responsibility for mistakes, but intense guilt and shame aren't a productive outcome in the long run. So if we even go back to that example of the client I said, short marriage, longer dating and courtship, short marriage, very young, under one-year-old child, he said that it was obvious they should not have gotten married. Although she checked all the boxes, the emotion wasn't there. I don't know. I'm not convinced that he was accurate. I'm just wondering if there was something else under the surface because she had such a completely different level of shock. She thought the marriage really was working. So he said she checked all the boxes for why they should get married. She said it checked all the boxes. And she was completely baffled about why he went outside the marriage, when they were married such a short period of time. That's a huge issue to deal with, and that really does require therapy. So Enright continues, the process of self-forgiveness can be a painful challenge, but deeply valuable. Key to this process is owning up to one's mistakes, understanding why they occurred, and helping to rectify the situation. So I had to forgive myself in the transition year between being asked for the divorce and the filing of it. And I had to forgive myself for what I did that was hurtful to the marriage. And that's all I was focused on. And so Enright says, begin by acknowledging that you are at fault, if you're the one that is at fault, and take responsibility for the hurt you caused. I did apologize, by the way. When I was told about the divorce, I did apologize. I said all the things that I did that caused you to hook up with Carmen, the baboon trainer. I am so very sorry. Right at that meeting, I said, I am so very sorry. And he accepted my apology. He was appreciative of my apology. It didn't make me any sadder and any fraught with distress for the next year, but no. I definitely owed him an apology. So Enright continues, reflect on why the event occurred and identify how to avoid a similar offense in the future. Apologize to the person you wronged and try to improve their life in a meaningful way. Lastly, the benefits of forgiveness. Forgiveness has been linked to greater feelings of happiness, hopefulness, and optimism. Absolutely, it has. The process, for me, I can definitely tell you, whenever I feel hurt by somebody, and I mean, I feel hurt by a lot of people, so do you. We all do on a daily basis. Things well outside of our marriages and relationships. But if we can forgive somebody, it just takes this pressure and stress off of us. It lightens our heart immediately, and it puts a smile on our face. The process of forgiveness, Enright continues, can also protect against serious conditions such as anxiety and depression and post-traumatic behavior. Harboring anger and resentment triggers the body to release stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline whenever the person comes to mind. Because they will come to mind, by the way. When you least expect it, the incident will just pop into your head and all of a sudden you'll feel frozen. All of a sudden, you'll start feeling anger and resentment. And when that happens, a steady stream of those chemicals can lead to stress and anxiety, as well as dampen creativity and problem solving. Really and truly, we're a mess. Basically, we're a mess. We've got to get a handle on it even when it pops up again, and it will. Forgiveness is a journey. We make that first big move towards forgiveness once we've processed everything. But then honestly, anything can trigger it coming back. And if we have those feelings of resentment again, just forgive. I forgive you. I forgive you. I forgive you. And we just feel calm again. And the emotional benefits are we reduce unhealthy anger. We repair potentially valuable relationships in the future or soon to be exes in a co-parenting relationship. Yes, we have to think about if we have children and we're getting divorced and the other parent, the other spouse has hurt us, it's to the benefit of the children that you forgive and that you grow as a person and exercise goodness in and of itself, no matter what the response is. So that's what Enright says, and that's from Psychology Today. Let's go to the Mayo Clinic. This is interesting. Forgiveness, letting go of grudges and bitterness. What is forgiveness? Well, forgiveness means different things to different people. Generally, however, it involves a decision to let go of resentment and thoughts of revenge. The act that hurt or offended you might always be with you, but forgiveness can lessen its grip on you and help free you from the control of the person who harmed you. See, that's really important because when we've been harmed, we all of a sudden are out of control because hurt has come in. And obviously, we live our lives on a daily basis. We try to avoid being hurt. We try and live in a way that is copacetic, that is pleasant, and that brings us happiness. And so when somebody hurts us, we feel out of control. The only way to get back into control is through forgiveness. Forgiveness can even lead to feelings of understanding, empathy, and compassion for the one who hurt you. Remember, go back in time, see how that person was raised, see what they experienced as a child, and maybe this is a reason why they did whatever they did to hurt you. And what's the opposite of not forgiving? You are under the control of that person constantly until you forgive. And philosophically, if I may add from me, maybe tough things happen to us to teach us how to forgive. So I've always believed that things happen to us for a reason, the good things and the bad things. And the tough things happen to us, in my opinion, in my philosophical opinion, to help teach us things, to help us grow. And so while we're dealing with the hurt, and it doesn't mean that we can't be hurt, while we're processing the hurt and getting to the point of being able to decide to forgive, please remember that this could be the greatest thing that's happened to you, the best, worst thing that's happened to you, so that it can teach you whatever you need to learn in your growth as a human being. Mayo continues, forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting or excusing the harm done to you or making up with the person who caused the harm. Okay, everybody seems to be in agreement over that. Forgiveness brings a kind of peace that helps you go on with your life. And that's really it. It puts you back in control and it allows you to live a more peaceful life. If you can look at the event and the person who hurt you and not hate them, you've mastered forgiveness. This is my philosophy. This is what I do. If you can really look at that person and not hate them, you've really mastered the art of forgiveness. And in the story with the young couple with the child, I was able to talk to both of them. They mediated, and we just had separate conversations. And with the wife, before the divorce was over, she had gotten to that point of forgiveness. And I could see the difference in her. She started working again. She looked so healthy when she came in to sign the final divorce papers. She was bouncing. She was walking on air. A completely different human being. Yes, she did have therapy. And I even said to her, I said, look, if you think I'm outside of my bounds, by suggesting that you get therapy, because in order to move forward and have the best co-parenting relationship and mother-daughter relationship, you must forgive, you must get past this. And she said, no, my parents say this to me, and I do have a therapist, and my therapist says the same things. So it did take time. It took over a year, but she got there. I'm not convinced the husband got there. I'm not convinced the husband understood that what he did, where its root was. And I think he understood it caused the demise of the marriage because he didn't want to be married. I don't know where he got to emotionally, though. I just didn't have that conversation with him, and I didn't see any changes. I really didn't see any changes in him, but I hope for the best because, again, these are just two people who, are trying their best like we all do. What are the benefits of forgiving someone? Mayo goes on. Letting go of grudges and bitterness can make way for improved health and peace of mind. Forgiveness can lead to healthier relationships, improved mental health, less anxiety, stress, and hostility, lower blood pressure, fewer symptoms of depression, a stronger immune system. That's interesting, isn't it? A stronger immune system, because our emotions do create our physical health. Improved heart health, improved self-esteem. And why is it so easy to hold a grudge? So that's something interesting the Mayo Clinic brings into play. And they say, being hurt by someone, particularly someone you love and trust, can cause anger, sadness, and confusion. If you dwell on hurtful events or situations, grudges filled with resentment, vengeance, and hostility can take root. If you allow negative feelings to crowd out positive feelings, you might find yourself swallowed up by your own bitterness or sense of injustice. Some people are naturally more forgiving than others. I am. Although I have many other faults, believe me, I just naturally forgive because I know immediately I'll feel better if I do. And once you've experienced that or understand that innately, you'll forgive everybody for everything. But even if you're a grudge holder, almost anyone can learn to be more forgiving. And what are the effects of holding a grudge? Well, it's kind of like what he said before. Bring anger and bitterness into every relationship and new experience. Become so wrapped up in the wrong that you can't enjoy the present. Absolutely. Become depressed or anxious. Feel that your life lacks meaning or purpose, or that you're at odds with your spiritual beliefs, and you lose valuable and enriching connectiveness with others. How do I reach a state of forgiveness is how they conclude the article. Forgiveness is a commitment to a personalized process of change. To move from forgiving to forgiveness, you might recognize the value of forgiveness and how it can improve your life. Well, you've heard a lot about it now. There is a huge value in forgiveness. Identify what needs healing and who needs to be forgiven and for what. Consider joining a support group or seeing a counselor, of course. Acknowledge your emotions about the harm done to you and how they affect your behavior and work to release them. Choose to forgive the person who's offended you. That choice, that's where the power is. Choosing, that's the power you get back. And move away from your role as victim. Yes, and release the control and power the offending person and situation have had in your life. As you let go of grudges, you'll no longer define your life by how you've been hurt. You might even find compassion and understanding. And this is me. You can normalize the hurt if you don't forgive. You can normalize the hurt so that you don't feel isolated. Okay. Normalizing the hurt, and let me backtrack on that. I misspoke. When you get a counselor, when you maybe go to a support group, and you look at the philosophy, misery loves company. Well, when you start talking to other person who have experienced the same hurt, all of a sudden it's normalized. You're not isolated. That was the point I wanted to make. You're not isolated. And therefore, it allows you to position yourself so that you can forgive and get to that state that you need to be in. Now, here's 8 keys to forgiveness. And this again is by Robert Enright with Berkeley. When another person hurts you, it upends our lives. So number one, know what forgiveness is and why it matters. Forgiveness is about goodness, about extending mercy to those who have harmed us, even if they don't deserve it. It's not about finding excuses for the offending person's behavior or pretending it didn't happen, nor is there a quick formula you can follow. Forgiveness is a process, and that's what I want all of you to remember. Forgiveness is a process with many steps that often proceeds in a non-linear fashion. Emotional roller coaster. You've heard me say this in other podcasts. Forgiveness is an emotional roller coaster. You won't get there in 5 minutes. It's a process. You may think you're there, and then you'll go back a little bit, and then you'll move forward. So just get in and enjoy the ride. Number two, become forgivingly fit. To practice forgiveness, it helps if you have worked on positively changing your inner world by learning to be what Enright calls forgivingly fit. Just as you would start slowly with a new physical exercise routine, it helps if you build up your forgiving heart muscles slowly, incorporating regular workouts into your everyday life. Okay, so forgiving little things on a daily basis. In order to get to forgiving the big hurt, like I said before, little things happen to us during the day. We'll be cut off in traffic. Somebody takes too long at the cash register. We're at the grocery store. You know, instead of being angry, forgive. That builds up the heart muscle. You can start becoming more fit, making a conscious effort not to talk disparagingly about those who have hurt you. That's a good thing to do. I need to learn that too. You don't have to say good things, but if you refrain from talking negatively, it will feed the more forgiving side of your mind and heart. That's really important. So, no, it's really bad if we talk negatively about people. And when we do, it's really normally to build ourselves up, our ego up. I always feel horrible when I speak disparagingly about somebody. And, you know, I'm human. I do that too. But I like the fact that he says it builds up the forgiving side of your mind and heart when you resist speaking negatively about people. He goes on to say, sometimes pride and power can weaken your efforts to forgive by making you feel entitled and inflated so that you hang on to your resentment as a noble cause. Try to catch yourself when you are acting from that place and choose forgiveness or mercy instead. If you need inspiration, it can help to seek out stories of mercy in the world by going to the International Forgiveness Institute website. internationalforgiveness.com. Number three, address your inner pain. Okay, this is really horrible, but you really do have to just sit with what your pain is. There are many forms of emotional pain, but the common forms are anxiety, depression, unhealthy anger, lack of trust, self-loathing or low self-esteem, an overall negative worldview. Okay, that can be me, and a lack of confidence in one's ability to change. All of these harms can be addressed by forgiveness, so it's important to identify the kind of pain you are suffering from and to acknowledge it. In divorce, it's mostly betrayal. I'm adding that. Mostly people feel betrayed, either betrayed that their partner didn't perform financially or betrayed that their partner betrayed them intimately. The more hurt you have incurred, the more important it is to forgive. The forgiveness equals the hurt, at least for the purpose of experiencing emotional healing. Number four, develop a forgiving mind through empathy. Okay, this is really, really hard, but this is why going back and figuring out why your partner hurt you, what was their experience growing up, I'm telling you, that's going to get you to empathy. But here's what Enright says. Scientists have studied what happens in the brain when we think about forgiving and have discovered that when people successfully imagine forgiving someone, they show increased activity in the neural circuits responsible for empathy. Okay, so our physical body creates our emotions and vice versa. And so this has been discussed with Psychology Today that I read to you from and the Mayo Clinic. And so Enright says the same thing. The chemicals released in our body, this tells us that empathy is connected to forgiveness and is an important step in the process of health. If you examine some of the details in the life of the person who harmed you, you can often see more clearly what wounds he or she carries and start to develop empathy for him or for her. First, try to imagine him as an innocent child needing love and support. He or she. Did he or she get that from the parents? Research has shown that if an infant does not receive attention and love from primary caregivers, they will have a weak attachment, which can damage trust. And then you inherit that when you marry that person. It may prevent him or her from ever getting close to others and set a trajectory of loneliness and conflict for the rest of his or her life. Recognizing that we all carry wounds in our hearts can help open the door to forgiveness and therefore empathy. Number 5, find meaning in the suffering. Okay, so back to my philosophy that everything that happens to us is for our own growth, you have to find meaning in the suffering. When we suffer a great deal, it's important that we find meaning in what we have endured. Without seeing meaning, a person can lose a sense of purpose, which can lead to hopelessness and a despairing conclusion that there is no meaning to life itself. Now, that's really bad. That is serious depression. That doesn't mean we look for suffering in order to grow or try to find goodness in another's bad actions. Instead, we try to see how our suffering has changed us or can change us in a positive way. Number 6, when forgiveness is hard, call upon other strengths. First, remember if you are struggling with forgiveness, that doesn't mean you're a failure at forgiveness. Forgiveness is a process that takes time, patience, and determination. Try not to be harsh on yourself, but be gentle and foster a sense of quiet within an inner acceptance of yourself. Try to respond to yourself as you would to someone whom you love deeply. Okay, super hard, but let's trust that Enright knows what he's talking about. Surround yourself with good and wise people who support you and who have the patience to allow you time to heal in your own way. Also, practice humility, not in the sense of putting yourself down, but in realizing that you're capable of imperfection and causing suffering for other people. Remember, you too can cause people to suffer. And if you want to be forgiven, you have to forgive others. Number 7. Forgive yourself. Here we go. Most of us tend to be harder on ourselves than we are on others, and we struggle to love ourselves. If you are not feeling lovable because of actions you've taken, you may need to work on self-forgiveness and offer to yourself what you offer to others who have hurt you, a sense of inherent worth despite your actions. In self-forgiveness, you honor yourself as a person, even if you are imperfect. If you've broken your personal standards in a serious way, there is a danger of sliding into self-loathing. Oh, believe me, I've been there. Yes, and I have to work hard on that. How about you? When this happens, you may not take good care of yourself. Okay, so pastry. You might overeat or oversleep. No, I overeat. I don't oversleep. I actually don't sleep then. Or start smoking or engage in other forms of self-punishment, alcohol, any kind of abuse, gambling. You need to recognize this and move towards self-compassion. Soften your heart towards yourself. And lastly, number 8, develop a forgiving heart. When we overcome suffering, we gain a more mature understanding of what it means to be humble, courageous, and loving to the world. We may be moved to create an atmosphere of forgiveness in our homes and workplaces, to help others who have been harmed overcome their suffering, or to protect our communities from a cycle of hatred and violence. Mediators are great at this. All of these choices can lighten the heart and bring joy to one's life. In conclusion, some people may believe that love for another who's harmed you is not possible, but I've found, Enright says, that many people who forgive eventually find a way to open their hearts. If you shed bitterness and put love in its place and then repeat this with many, many other people, you become freed to love more widely and deeply. This kind of transformation can create a legacy of love that will live on long after you're gone. And lastly, for the health effects, what happens if I can't forgive someone? And this is continuing from Berkeley. Forgiveness can be challenging, especially if the person who's hurt you doesn't admit wrong. If you find yourself stuck, practice empathy. Ask yourself why he or she would have behaved in such a way. Reflect on times you've hurt other people and be aware that forgiveness is a process and even small hurts may need to be revisited and forgiven over and over again. Forgiveness doesn't guarantee reconciliation. In fact, you may not want to reconcile. That's not the point. The point is, it frees you. It gets you back in control, and it allows you to love again. What if the person I'm forgiving doesn't change? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether they change or not. It matters that you've changed. That's the whole point of this. It matters that you've changed. And in you changing, you gain control over your life. And when you're hurt again, you can rise above it and you have the formula to move past it and to grow. And if you're the one that needs forgiveness, ask for it. Apologize and ask for it. And if they don't give it to you, just let it go. You have to work on yourself so that you don't commit that hurt again. So forgiveness works for those who have been betrayed and hurt, and forgiveness works for the person who has committed the wrong. I hope this has been educational and uplifting for all of you, because this is one of the most important things in life, whether it's for a divorce or for any other situation that you may be in where you feel hurt or you've hurt other people. Forgiveness is one of the most important things that you can learn and practice, and I guarantee you, your daily life will become so much more enjoyable. Well, that's it for forgiveness. Thank you all for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host, amicable divorce expert. I'm a mediator, and I also file for amicable divorces. If you would like to suggest a topic for a future podcast, you can reach me at Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com, or go to my website, divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com, and you can get in touch with me that way. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to our next episode.